Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 278. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with the lovely and talented Tim Elliott.
It's kind of twangy this morning.
The always effervescent Phil Wilson.
Bubbly and effervescent.
and our buddy Graham is off this week. He is, I guess,
at a lake somewhere.
Or he's shining his woody. One of the two.
One of those.
I think they were out selling crafts.
Yes.
It is the craft selling season
season. Yep.
You know, we've never seen. He ought to do e-commerce. His wife ought to do e-commerce with all her crafts because she's selling this stuff all over the place. And we've never seen it.
We haven't.
So I'm wondering what's up with that.
I don't think I've ever seen her.
That's right. That's right. Maybe she doesn't exist. Maybe he's made it all up. Of course, I've met his son, so his son had to come from somewhere. But anyway, hey, let's dive into it because we've got a special guest on today.
Yep.
And we want to be able to spend some quality time with him.
I love quality time.
Yeah. So what's going on in Minnesota stories? Anything hot?
Hot.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Dogs. Dogs could be hot at the state fair.
Nice segue, Tim.
What?
Not
too shabola.
Well, our buddy Julio Hayes Zapata at the TwinCities.com wrote that article about the fabulous Wi-Fi at the fair.
A lot of data use.
Yeah, and it's you know, I just wonder how long this is going to last, though. With as LTE continues to get better and faster.
What do you mean if people are going to actually use Wi-Fi at the fair?
Yeah. I suppose there'll always be data caps and so on, and people are always going to want to do big things. Like, I shot a video and I want to be able to upload it.
Did you do that when you were at the fair? Did you do the fair this year, Steve?
We did not. We were going to go on Saturday and it was going to rain, and we said, well, we'll go tomorrow. And then Sunday came and we said, nah. And then Monday came and it was like, should we go? Nah. Because we had other stuff we wanted to do and we never went.
So you went a whole year without a fix of Sweet Martha's cookies?
No, the kids brought them home. My daughter went 5 times to the fair.
Are you kidding
me? No, she went with her pals like 3 times. And then she went with a couple of girlfriends once. And then Alex was going to go on Monday. And he said, hey, if you want, I'm going to meet my friends over there if you want to tag along. So she went with him. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But this story was interesting because users used 2 terabytes of data.
That's a lot of data. Had you gone, Steve, it would have been 2.5 terabytes.
That's right.
Three.
That's right.
Three.
Yeah, I would have been chewing up that data. So
that's right.
Snapchat. Tim,
did you go to the fair this year?
I did not.
None of us went to the fair. They're going to revoke our Minnesota citizenship. You know,
I hate when that happens.
No, we usually go to the Dakota County Fair, which is quite nice.
Quite nice.
Earlier in the summer and over there in Farmington.
And you can get closer to the livestock.
No, we didn't, but I think we went the year before. Anyway, we go about every other year, and you get most of the same, experience. See the cows and the pigs, and you get something on a stick. So
yeah, but that's what the county fair is all about—is really kind of the livestock. The state fair here is very much not very aggy. It just seems to me it's not very aggy. It's very agriculture. You don't hear a lot of. You always hear just about the food. It's all about the food here at the Minnesota State Fair.
Yeah.
So,
well, hey, you know, this other story here about Kitizen moving to that new startup space in the North Loop,
the co-working space,
the new co-working space. And, I'm doing a head slap because Startup Venture Loft is the name of the new co-working space. I haven't even heard of it. Did we talk about this at some point?
No.
Okay.
First time I've heard of it too.
But I think this is Kitizen is actually, I'm not sure, but are they like the anchor of this thing?
And
maybe the people that are starting it up as well. I don't know.
Well, it's healthcare.mn, which has the space.
Oh, okay.
So, Yeah, they're expanding and doing this startup venture loft. So they probably got all kinds of extra space in there and thought, eh, what the hell? Let's just put together a co-working space.
Yeah, why not?
So
everybody's doing it.
Maybe they can find some guys to fix up their health exchange too.
Yeah.
You know? Get a few programmers in there to fix
maybe,
that thing up.
Maybe actually fix that up.
That's not healthcare.mn. Sorry.
Let's
not disparage healthcare.mn. Well, I'll put a link in the show notes to this Startup Ventures Loft, which I thought looked really interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, Tim, you have a little note here on
Target,
some Bay Area Target stores.
Yeah, they're gonna do some express stores in San Francisco, which makes sense. Like the one in Dinkytown, which they opened up recently, which we talked about. These are sort of like CVS or Walgreens sized stores that are.
But can you buy your smokes there? That's the important thing. Can you get your smokes there?
I don't know. Probably. I don't know. Does Target sell? Target doesn't sell tobacco, so no. I don't think they do.
No, they don't.
They don't. So there. So no.
Okay.
You'll have to go to that sketchy liquor store across the street.
Okay.
But there you go. It's good to see them continue to innovate, and it's first one out of the state is in San Francisco, which makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll have these all over the place in urban areas.
Well, it's a great expansion strategy, but I also wonder, you know, typically most chain stores have regional buyers, and it's more common in fashion where you'll have, you know, Macy's will have a buyer for, or Nordstrom or somebody, you know, a department store will have a buyer for, you know, the Midwest, and then they'll have one for the Southeast and East and so on. And I wonder if Target's going to be doing the same thing, if the merchandising mix will be different in the Bay Area than it is for Dinkytown, for example. Are they going to have different electronics, you know, in that section in terms of accessories and so on?
I would imagine so. It's the first one's going to be in the financial district, and so it'll probably be targeted mostly at workers getting lunch or picking up stuff, you know, on their way home kind of deal. So
sure.
I'm sure it'll be a lot different than what they stock in Dinkytown, which is for students.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Okay. But next time I'm in San Francisco and after this thing is open, I'm going to go and check it out.
Really?
Oh,
good,
yeah.
Good. Have you been to the one in Dinkytown?
I have not, but next time we're downtown in that area, I'm going to go over there and take a look.
There you go. Cause you it are just the, seems, it seems the retail like a good giant.
Seems like a good idea, though, you know?
Okay.
So.
Yeah, it really does.
There you have it. Let's see. What other? Big week next week. I think that's probably.
Oh, my gosh. For startups? Startup stuff?
Yeah. Startup week runs into startup weekend. It's going to be a big one. There's no doubt about that. It starts. The official start is Tuesday night, which is when BetaMN is, beta.mn. So that's the official kickoff. The unofficial kickoff is really in our Mobile Twin Cities gathering. So
that's right, at Coco.
See how I co-opt myself into that sort of thing?
There you go. And then the tech cocktail, it says it's a Twin Cities mixer and startup showcase, which makes it sound like it's an evening cocktail event, but it's not. Yeah. It's a morning breakfast event.
Yep.
And 10 startups, and it's shaping up to be quite a great event, so I would encourage everybody to go. There'll be a link here in the show notes.
So you're saying Bloody Marys instead of Manhattans?
Hey, feel free.
Is that what we're talking about here?
That's right.
Yeah, because usually I start with a shot of hard liquor in the morning. That gets me started. So what about, you know, what I really like about what they've put together is that there are a lot of different things. Be sure to check it out. We'll put a link in the show notes to the actual Startup Week site. But there are a lot of little after parties and things like that. And I think some of the biggest things are always the most exciting things are the mingling and the networking.
Always.
You know, either before or after these events. So that's always a good time.
Yeah, and you're right on it, Phil.
I think Engine's got one. They're doing a preview a kickoff to mini demo on the 18th with, I think, Aaron Cardell is having an open house at his new mobile startup space, which is in the Grain Exchange building in the North building. So,
that'll
be a good time. So lots of good stuff going on. But if we look ahead to October, if you look ahead to the 18th of October, as a matter of fact, brand new event this year, spawned out of the Internet of Things space by Justin Grammans, one of our favorite local entrepreneurs and partner, is put together the IoT Hack Day. IoT Hack Day, and it's, you can see it at iothackday.mn. But we ought to get him on.
We really should, because I am very, very interested in this, so much so that I think I'm going to go.
Well, believe it or not. That would be so unlike you.
Wow. Well, I normally don't get into, I'm more in the finished goods arena.
Yes.
But we'll see.
Well, let's get him on. Let's talk a little bit about what it's all about. This is a team event with a public opening as well. So why don't we go ahead and put something together with him? Why don't you get him on the phone?
Justin.
Yes, am I here?
You're here. Good morning. Wow. How are you?
That's amazing.
Excellent.
It's as if we were just talking about you.
Yeah,
I know.
That's right.
As if we had pre-planned this ahead of time.
How are you, Justin?
Good. I'm doing well. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you guys about what's going on here with the Hack Day.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks really interesting. So why don't you, just for our listeners, describe what it is and why you decided to spearhead the start of this thing?
So I've been running this Arduino MN group for a couple years, and it's been kind of fun to see what people around town have been putting together. When the group kind of first started, we were doing a lot of stuff in the makerspace. People were showing off little projects, and we continue to do that. Actually, it's awesome. The platform itself is so flexible, and it can be used in so many different ways. Whether you're non-technical and you're an artist that wants to use it for whatever, whether you're a person wants to just set up a little monitor for your home, or all the way to production systems. So, been seeing a lot of really cool stuff that people have been building here around town. And they've been showing them kind of at our monthly meetings. And kind of this idea came up was like, well, what could we build in 12 hours? Let's just imagine that we put a bunch of smart people together in a room and, gave them some hardware, gave them some time, put a little bit of a time crunch on it, but also had some incentives, I guess, to try and build something kind of cool and fun. And, let's make a whole day event of it. And decided to not really go with the whole sort of startup weekend thing. There's kind of that mentality where you just kind of put a bunch of people together, people bring ideas, and then you just kind of, try and create something out of nothing in one day. And I think that works, in software, and it can definitely work in business plans and that sort of stuff. But there's just a lot of stuff that needs to kind of be foundational, needs to be done, at least in the hardware realm, ahead of time. So the spirit of this is more the Y Combinator style. You build a team ahead of time, have a plan, maybe even get a chance to tinker around with some stuff before, and then see how far you can get in 12 hours.
So I see that the process, I'm looking at the timeline on the website, and for those listeners, we'll put a link in the show notes to this, but that you submit an idea first,
right,
before anything, through September 30th. And then I'm assuming that somebody, you or somebody else, looks at it and decides whether or not, it's valid, the idea itself, or that there's actually somebody behind it and they're really going to do it and they're going to pull together a team and so on.
Yeah. That's kind of the idea. Now
the latter.
The latter, for sure. There isn't really going to be too much of a filtering process. We're going to take everything we possibly can. When we originally kind of set this up, we didn't really know how much space we had, how much sponsorship dollars we had. Because there's a cost here. This is free. This is a free event. And so the sponsors are putting together not only the hardware, but sponsors are actually giving cash. And we're giving, we're having breakfast, lunch, and dinner put together. We're going to have t-shirts. We're going to have gift certificates for hardware given away at the end. Our intention is to have cash too, as well. Just the remainder of the money left over will go to the winning team. So all of that is just to kind of say that it's still very open-ended, and we're looking for 10 teams. But if we get more and the budget will allow for it, that's just fine. So, but we are looking for people that are serious, and we do want people that will show up that day and that will commit and that we'll have a team. And teams can be, it's kind of a loose term. I would define team as two or more. So
okay.
You just have one person and you can completely submit your ideas right now just with one person, that's fine. But and we're going to have an event on October 2nd at Code 42, which is where we will kind of we'll kind of do like a little bit of a matchmaking thing, but we'll also have the hardware providers there and kind of get the teams together. And so if you're still a solo person by October 2nd, hopefully at that event, you could pick somebody else up too along the way. But if you're one person and you have an idea, please submit it and we'll actually help pair you up too.
Well, and then register. I see here registered teams that day would receive free hardware from Spark, Punchthrough, SmartThings, or STMicro.
Yes.
So they could choose which one they wanted to build on, right?
Yep. Absolutely. So those companies have offered up their platforms for free if you build something on it, and then you'll get a chance to keep the hardware too at the end of the thing. So
that's very, very cool. Wow.
Yep. So tell me, Justin, the Arduino MN meetups or meetings, you know, monthly. How have those been attended? Have you seen a lot of growth in this space? Have you a lot of interest in this space locally, or is it sort of very much in its infancy?
I've seen it improve. I've definitely seen it improve. And what's kind of been fun, I guess, over the past couple months, more recently, is there is this. I definitely feel like Minneapolis is kind of this hotbed of the Internet of Things. There's a lot of companies around that people have no idea that. Well, in terms of what they do. And some of them are sponsors that are basically, you know, a part of the group, whether it be ExoSight or NimbleLink. You know, obviously SmartThings is now kind of on the map a little bit more, but they were very much sort of under the radar. A lot of these companies were kind of under the radar. And what's happening, I feel, is that, you know, this is an opportunity for people to start learning and finding out more about these other organizations in town. And so the group is continuing to grow, and it's moving, I think, more into this kind of commercial space, for better or for worse. Again, I keep it completely open, so whoever wants to present can present, but I'm just thinking back in my head the past couple months. We've had Spark come in and present. They've shown their platform. This last month was ExoSight, which they're a cloud-based, basically they take in all the data, you know, and they provide charts and graphs and all sorts of stuff. So they're on that side of it. NimbleLink has got a cellular wireless device that allows you to plug an Arduino into and start getting data up through the Verizon network and stuff like that. So that's kind of a long-winded way of saying, yeah, the group is growing, and it's starting to bring in other, I guess, commercial players too, to show off their stuff. But you know, we're all about open hardware, and we're all about, you know, allowing people just to create stuff on their own.
Well, can I ask a question about because you know, the hardware piece is one side, you know, if you look at Spark and Punchthrough and SmartThings and so on, but the other part is obviously coding the solution and all of that, and there seems to be a lot of competing platforms for IoT. You know, I mean, Digi locally here with iDigi and ThingWorks and. Yep. You know, Sensor Cloud, and I can't remember all the other ones, is there, I guess what I'm thinking about is platforms as accelerators for building solutions. And is that kind of in the mix anywhere?
In the mix in terms of just this, the hack day, or just in general?
I know in general there's this battle royale going on with platforms,
yeah,
but, and operating systems, you know, free RTOS and all that. In terms of hack day itself, are there any higher level Arduino based, solutions for IoT that are also going to be in the mix, or is that up to the teams to make a choice on how they're going to build something?
Yeah. Well, actually, I would say that with the hardware that and the platforms that are kind of being given away are completely optional, and there are probably going to be some teams that choose not to use them. There is a open home automation software product, I guess, that's it's all open source, and it's called OpenHAB. And a guy came to the group last month and spoke all about it, and he's done a ton of stuff within his house, and it's all open source software. It's all running on a little server that he has, basically running a Raspberry Pi. And he has just chosen to, you know, keep keep just using that platform. And so he's going to be competing in the Internet of Things Hack Day. And, you know, he might take a look at some of the other ones. And if they seems like that they might do what he wants, that's fine. But there's plenty of other opportunities to use other software out there. And I would say that, you know, for some teams it'll fit, but for some other ones, they'll just want to roll their own or
right.
You know, they want to keep their data in-house.
Yeah. Well, the only reason I was asking is it's always tough to know what's even available. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think part of this event, I guess, you know, so this is the first time we've done this. So we're going to learn over time and see what happens. But it has been interesting as the word kind of got out. You know, there's lots of reasons as to why these companies want to be a part of this. Obviously, you know, they want to get their products into more hands of people. And it's not just generally, you know, throw this product, you know, out to anybody. The people that are competing in this event are your key customers, right? These are people that are actually going to be using it. It's not somebody, you know, you could walk down the street and hand out Sparks to everybody, but that doesn't do you much use, right? Actually, if you show up at this event and you give them to teams, that's really where that's really where your core audience is. And so it's been fun to kind of see that, to kind of marry that up. You know, these companies want to get their products out. I'm all about helping out, you know, local companies that are just getting going and even large ones too, obviously, ones that have been bought for millions of dollars. But just to kind of throw this sort of, you know, the interest and then also the availability of the hardware together in one day and kind of see what happens with it.
Yeah.
I think it's worth noting here, and this is Justin, I don't want to by any means put you in, make you feel embarrassed, but Justin is really kind of one of those guys that I so deeply admire because he started so many of these things. He's always sort of just leading the way into understanding different spaces. You know, I met Justin, you know, when he was still, you know, he'd really kind of established a solid Ruby group, you know, Ruby or community in Minneapolis that he opened. He started Mobile Twin Cities and brought the mobile community together when that sort of started up and then has transitioned into the Internet of Things. You know, Justin is really kind of this serial entrepreneur from a standpoint of, I guess it's not really entrepreneurship when you're not making a lot of money. He gives a lot of time and a lot of, you've always done a great job in opening up people's eyes and bringing people into the tent to figure out, you know, what are happening in these new technologies. So that's sort of a poor way of me stumbling through it, just saying how much we appreciate, you know, the things that you've done in these different spaces. Do you have any idea at this point in time what's next? Because, you know, I've seen you go through these, you know, these interest levels at different platforms, never really letting go of the previous one. But do you have any idea what's up after the Internet of Things? Because you're still a young man. So,
oh man, well, I don't feel very young actually. Once I have a 2-year-old, and he basically, every day I feel my age more and more.
Yeah.
But you know, that's a very interesting question. I definitely feel like I'm more on the cutting edge, more on the fringe, I guess, than what technologies are. I mean, I've been a part of mobile, like you said, Phil. You know, started that group and kind of hopped on that technology even before the iPhone came out. You know, I mean, when we were just kind of talking about these devices, and I've been very much involved with them. But I mean, I think if you had asked me back then what was next, could I predict that the Internet of Things was next? I would say no, absolutely not. I mean, I think as time has kind of gone on, people have started to realize the value and kind of the thing is that there's so many market forces that are kind of coming into play, I think, with the Internet of Things, whether it be cheap hardware, being able to spin up cloud infrastructure very cheaply, people now actually wanting to track data and understand about themselves. I probably would have never predicted that. I mean, the fact that Fitbit and just the general consumer wants to track their steps and is really interested in kind of what's going on around them, and not even from a home automation standpoint, just from the health standpoint, you know, I would have never predicted that at all. And so, you know, as time goes on, market forces will like completely change. I can tell you personally, I'm really interested in, like quadcopters, you know, the whole idea of like kind of unmanned surveillance, but also the commercial viability of that, you know. I think there's a lot that can be done in that space right now that you can do from the air that you couldn't do from the ground. And it's one thing to have Google Earth and all that sort of stuff, but to actually be able to maybe do something on a smaller scale and be able to kind of map stuff out, that's an area that I'm kind of just personally interested in. I don't know if that's going to go anywhere. You know, you hear about Amazon, you know, possibly using, you know, quadcopters to deliver stuff. But I see that as kind of a next sort of technology front, I guess, that if the average layman could get into, there would be some very interesting businesses and some very interesting opportunity coming out in that space.
So you're the one that's registered quadcopters.mn. I got it.
I haven't even thought of that yet, actually. Thanks for the idea.
You better get it before the show gets published.
Yeah,
you
better get it.
Well, it's always exciting. You know, I owe a lot of what I'm involved in the technology space to Justin, and count him as a great friend. And, you know, I'm always excited to see what the next thing is. And IoT Hack Day is just really going to be a very interesting space. And I'm anxious to see all these people that you probably don't even know are interested in this space that are actually doing things. I would imagine, Justin, you see a few people at Arduino MN that you don't necessarily expect to see on a weekly basis.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you see this with Mobile Twin Cities too as well. You know, there's just kind of there's a core group that comes a lot. And then there's also just this group of people that just kind of cycle in, and maybe they're there for a month or two and then they're gone for a year. And then they kind of come back. The interesting thing that I have just been kind of blown away by was, I mean, I remember Zach Sapala from Spark actually coming to one of our first meetings.
Yep.
And he had a little PVC pipe and he was lighting up a little light bulb, you know, and to kind of see where that has gone over the past, you know, 2 years, and to kind of feel like, well, geez, this was the company was literally started here, you know?
Yeah.
And there have been a couple other Kickstarter projects actually. That our team, that people from our group have done, and it's been amazing, and they've been successfully funded, and it's just crazy what people are doing in their garages and basements. Real quick, I did also want to say that, you know, it's not just me putting together the IoT Hack Day. There is about us.
Yep.
Varun has been huge. Him and I kind of hatched this idea, and we also have help from Doug Thorpe and Kristen Icarella has also been helping us too. So I have a support group as well, you know. So I'm kind of out there tweeting and pushing it very hard, but there's a lot of people that are helping me make this happen.
So it's Varun Bhartia. Is that how you pronounce his last name?
Yeah, Bhartia.
Bhartia.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. I met Varun over the summer. He actually is native to Minnesota, but he just took a job at Facebook, and he's actually in San Francisco right now. But he's going to be back here for the event. And he's been hugely helpful in making all this happen.
Very nice. Very cool. So lastly, the date of the event is, why don't you run through the important dates associated with IoT Hack Day?
Sure. So from any time from now until, I would say, October 2nd, submit your team. So go to iothackday.mn and click on the apply link at the top and submit your team. Idea. And like I say, even if you're just one person right now, that's not a problem. Submit it. If you just want to hack and you don't even have a team or don't even have an idea, you can also just register as a participant. And so we're collecting names of participants, and we will start kind of marrying people up as needed. The next big kind of milestone day is October 2nd. So the evening of October 2nd, it's a Thursday. It's actually the normal night we have our Arduino MN meeting. So we're not going to have the Arduino meeting that night. But at Code 42, all teams will be and participants. We'll be invited to Code 42, and we'll have some beers, and we'll have Spark and Punchthrough and SmartThings and STMicro. They'll all be there, and you'll be able to take a look at their hardware. If you want to use their stuff, you'll be able to take home something that night for your group, and you can start experimenting around and kind of like learning the platform before the day. Then the next big event is October 18th, and that's a Saturday, and we'll start off at 8 o'clock in the morning and arrive at Minitronics. And the whole idea is, how much can you accomplish in a kind of a 12-hour span? So we'll have an initial sort of pitch session where people will share their idea, kind of talk about what they've done so far, and then it's going to be, you know, go. And, you know, we'll have breakfast, lunch, and dinner to be served by people there. Sponsors will have sponsorship tables there too as well. All the sponsors have been offered up a table, so they'll have people there to help. So if you're running into problems with using SmartThings, there will be guys from SmartThings there, whatever. And then, you know, like I say, and any of the other sponsors, they might have some brochures or signs and all that sort of stuff. I do want to kind of give it a little bit of that feel where You know, you can just talk to some of the other sponsors around town, even if they don't have hardware per se. They're definitely involved in this Internet of Things space. And then the key thing is that evening at 7:30, we're going to have our final pitches. And if you're from the public, say you don't even actually want to partake in this event, but you want to show up and see the final pitches and see what people have done, that's, we're going to completely open that up. So we've got a big theater at Minitronics, and you can register on our website under the timeline section. And like I say, if you're not competing, just please register on Eventbrite, and we'll be able to, you know, then accommodate basically the number of people that are there. And we're, like I say, we're opening up to the public. So I would love it if, you know, you guys could attend. I would love it if Star Tribune, someone from Pioneer Press. I mean, I would love to get some huge press around this at the end of the day and say, look at what these guys did.
Can you really get any more huge press than the Minovate gang? Really? Seriously? Do you think? You know, there's 8-9 people. They're right here that are.
We'll take what we can get. I'm fine with it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Well, we will definitely be there. I know I'll be there. So.
I'd love
to come. Thanks very much for taking some time. You know, it's always great to see the dedication of people getting up early on a Saturday morning when we record this to be on the show. So thanks very much for that.
Sure. Not a problem. I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Justin.
Okay.
Take care, Jay. Yep.
Take care.
See you
later. Bye-bye.
What a great event. Wow.
Yeah. You know, I am always amazed at some of the stuff that Justin is involved in. He just, And you know, he doesn't just get involved. He starts this stuff up, and he just, I don't know when he sleeps, because he does have two young sons that can't be sleeping a lot.
Well, then we got to do a hat tip to his wife.
Becky. Becky is incredible. Let me tell you, and incredibly tolerant. So,
wow.
So anyway, what else is happening to Tim? Are you there?
I'm here.
I'm afraid you've dozed off or something.
Well, speaking of the Internet of Things, what do you think about this the celebrity hacking story?
Oh my gosh!
There's certain things that you maybe not necessarily want to see.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I was talking to a young man who shall remain nameless because he listens to this, who said, "Do you have any idea where these can be seen?" I said, why? Didn't you do a Google search? Yeah, but I can't find them anywhere.
4chan.
No. All these sites are participating and pulling them down immediately if they show back up.
Even 4chan?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yep. There was an article in Ars Technica about how all these sites were participating. You know, Perez Hilton that does that, whatever that celebrity gossip thing is, he put them up, and then he immediately took them down. And apologize profusely and all of that. So pretty much everybody is participating and keeping them off.
I apologize profusely.
Yeah.
I didn't think anybody would notice.
That's right.
Well, what's funny is the reaction has been very negative to this. And, you know, this is not the first time that celebrity pictures have come out.
Right.
But it seems like the reaction this time has been different, and it's kind of interesting to see.
I think it's the pure, you know, the pure volume of flesh that happened in one shot. That's probably the celebrity flesh that showed up. So, I don't know. I can't decide if it's really not that big a thing or it is an invasion of privacy. Cause, you know, we've talked about this before that, you know, privacy, get over it. You know, it's, if you're posting this sort of stuff, you're putting it out there. If you're uploading it from your phone, you know, you're really kind of asking for it, aren't you? But at the same time.
Well, did you see the Ricky Gervais tweets? I mean, he took them down after, but he was like saying, you know, celebrities, to avoid these kinds of pictures getting out, don't take them in the first place.
which I understand, and that's usually the way I fall on it. But I saw I can't remember who published the tweet of okay, so if you get what you get what you deserve if you have these things floating around the internet. Well, you never say that when somebody hacks your bank site or somebody hacks your credit card site. And it's, you know, it kind of is the same sort of thing, that there is a certain amount of trust that we're all putting in the internet that it, you know, like, you know, like civilization itself, if you don't play by the rules, then it's kind of becomes uncivilized. So,
Well, well, you know, go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, I put this story in because it's a big story and there's a tech angle, obviously. But
obviously.
Apple was blamed almost from the beginning, even before we knew whether or not these stars had used iPhones.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, and there have been there have been pictures taken with other operating systems like Android and Windows Mobile that were also in part of the hack repository of imagery, because somebody went in and looked at the EXIF data for the photo and were able to see how what it was taken with and so forth. And, so it's not, iCloud itself wasn't hacked. You know, at the end of the day, and we'll talk a little bit more. There's going to be a security discussion in just a little bit. But most people, their Apple ID is pretty simple. And it's simple because you've got to put it in every time you buy an app. If you don't have the Touch ID, you have to do it every time you buy something on your TV, if you're using an Apple TV. And you've got to be putting it in a lot. And so you want it to be simple. It's something you can remember. And that's one of the big problems, that and the fact that Apple's website, where you go in to answer the security questions and manage your ID and all of that, did not have a timeout limit. And same with your Find Your iPhone. So that was actually a faux pas, security faux pas on Apple's part. But it's a simple passwords, and it's the answers to the security questions that are, what's the name of your dog? The dog, oh, by the way, that you've blogged about and shot on Instagram about 3,000 times. You know, it's not that hard to go in and hack them.
Well, it'll be tougher, hopefully, after all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Big piles of Polaroids. That's the answer.
That's right.
New technology.
This is a side tangent, but you brought it up, Phil. There's a company that reverse engineered how they made the Polaroid film, and it is producing it again.
Really?
So, somewhere in Europe. Yeah. Yeah. They didn't get the Polaroid patents or anything. They basically reverse engineered it from, they had some samples of, of Polaroid film, uh-huh. And they used that, and they got some people involved that had worked at Polaroid, and
yeah, there's a lot of people still out there.
Yeah, and they're selling it. So kind of funny.
That is interesting. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe we'll go back to that.
Yeah,
maybe we'll just go back to chiseling them in stone.
Yeah.
Well, we may have to. If the if the Comcast thing goes through.
Wait a minute.
What?
Segway coming up.
Jeez. We should have a little jingle whenever we segue.
Everything is going to be better when the FCC regulates it, right?
No. Did you know that we're going to be part of Greatland Broadband, or whatever they're calling it, or Greatland Cable? That'll be the spinoff, and Minnesota is one of the states that if the Comcast Time Warner merger goes through, they're going to spin off this third company and basically do a lot of consolidation, and they're going to basically pass it off to this new cable company.
It's Greatland Connections.
Greatland Connections, yep.
And it's owned by, it's a joint venture, but it's mostly owned by Charter.
Yeah. Yeah, so. And who do you guys have down there in Lakeville?
Charter.
And are you happy with Charter?
They're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd never really be truly happy with
it. It works.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see what Greatland Business Connection looks like, because I've got a Comcast business account. So, but the FCC chair basically came out and said, you know what? Most of the U.S. has no broadband competition at 25 megabit per second. And, that's what I've been arguing along the whole time, because Tim, you many times have said, you have choices, you could go to CenturyLink or you could go to satellite and whatever. It's like, well, yeah, if I was just checking my email, but, right. Streaming video and, sending up a 350 meg zip file to a printer or a client or something, you gotta have some decent bandwidth, and there really aren't any choices. So,
well, CenturyLink is rolling out their gig service here, but it'll take a while before it gets to you.
Yeah, yeah.
But LTE in the meantime might be a viable alternative.
No, for cost, no, not a chance.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah,
I mean, there could be ways that cellular wireless would work for a lot of people, and the speed is certainly there. So
could be.
I just don't think. I mean, this is the FCC's trying to regulate the internet, and I think they're even behind this thing coming up on Wednesday. What is this? The net neutrality, whatever it is, day of. I put a story in. What is it? The day of action. All this is the government wants to get involved in regulation, and if it happens, we're all going to be worse off for it.
Right. Right.
You know, but there's all these people that are saying, oh, everything needs to be neutral, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, I hate to tell you this, but the internet's never been neutral. And, you know, the more regulation we get, the worse it's going to be. And you're going to see freedom of speech issues and all sorts of stuff that we don't want to see. So,
yeah. Well, let's not leap down that rat hole right now, because it's that would take the rest of the show.
All right. But
at any rate.
All right. So why don't we hop to the security tip of the week, Steve, because I think that's sort of probably one of those things that's probably top of mind, especially after the event from, the big iCloud celebrity nude photo dump. So let's hop to that, shall we?
Steve's security tip of the week.
All right, security tip of the week.
Yeah.
Here's my big tip. Use two-step verification with your Apple ID. It's a simple thing to do. It's really easy to do it. I'm going to put an FAQ in the show notes, and also the link to log in and manage your Apple ID and set up two-step verification. And basically what it does is it sends you a code. So you put in your ID, but then sends you a code, and you got to put in the code as well. And you have to have your device, whether it's an iPhone or iPad, and your Apple ID password. And so it's classic two-step verification. They also give you a recovery code, which I have in a secure note inside LastPass, or I would encourage people to do it in 1Password or anything else. But to keep that, because if you lose your phone or it gets stolen, you have no way to recover your Apple ID, and that's a bad thing. So make sure you keep that code. But setting it up, I've found that it really isn't that intrusive. And that's one of the big things about security, is that, you know, you can be more secure, but, you know, if you put 57 locks on the door coming from your garage into the house and you've got to unlock every single one of them, yeah, it's going to be more secure, but it's, you know, nobody's going to do it because it's such a pain in the butt. Same thing with security. And this is actually pretty simple. And it's going to get easier when Apple continues to roll out Touch ID in various devices. It's going to get simpler. And so you'll be able to just put your thumbprint on it or whatever. But please, 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 because your Apple ID typically is very simplistic, just use two-step verification.
So you're saying that Jennifer Lawrence would have less explaining to do with her mother this week if she had done this?
This is correct. This is correct. Yeah, because you don't need security questions that people can find the answer to. You know, what school did you go to in sixth grade? Okay, well, how hard is that? Now, the other thing, too, is I heard about this on the Mac Break Weekly podcast.
What school did you go to?
Serrano Elementary.
I'm not at liberty to discuss the those could have been past things. But anyway, on the Mac Break Weekly podcast, Leo Laporte said, you know, I always put fake answers in my responses. And I thought, that's brilliant. I hadn't even thought of that. You know, so rather than put real answers in, you have to remember what the fake answers are.
Yeah, there's that. That's a problem.
Like, what was your mother's maiden name? You know, Schmedlap. Well, no, it really isn't Schmedlap. It's something else. But at any rate, so that's my tip.
There you have it.
Yeah. Good tip. And I just wanted to throw it in for those of us still using Android, you can do the same thing and use the Google Analyticator or whatever that app that they have.
Google Authenticator.
Authenticator.
I love that app. In fact, I use it with LastPass. I use it with WordPress.com. I use it with websites that has two-step verification set up. I mean, it's incredibly. Yeah. My Microsoft login account uses it. It's incredibly useful.
Set it up with Gmail. So I've got my Gmail account set up with it.
Yep,
yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah, works well.
Yep. Great.
There you have it. The security tip of the week.
Oh, the week.
All right. So what's the one cool thing this week that you guys...
All right. You're up first.
You're up, Phil. Yep.
I'm up first.
You're up first.
Little old me. Well, you know me, enamored with the whole Internet of Things and the smartwatch world and the proud owner of a Kickstarter version Pebble. I was excited to see that the Moto 360 is now available for sale. The Moto 360 is now sold out. So...
Jeez.
I did read somewhere that Best Buy is getting them sometime this week. So you may be able to swoop in and get one at Best Buy.
Well, here's my quandary, because I am sort of thinking I may switch over to an iPhone 6. You know, I'm what good would a Moto 360 do for me if I do that?
So. It wouldn't. So I wouldn't get one.
Yeah. At least at this point in time. So
until I decide.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but I think that, you know, the Moto 360 is the first smartwatch that really coming down the pike that actually looks like a watch from a shape standpoint. People do say it's a little large, but then again, if you've seen some of the watches that are available now on the fashion side, they're pretty large. So, I think this falls right in line, but the Moto 360 is really my one cool thing of the week.
Right. Now, the battery life is not supposed to be good on this.
They say a day at best, right?
Yeah, that would be the killer to me. I mean, if you could get like 2 or 3 days out of it, I think it might be interesting. But yeah, if it's going to be like barely getting a day, it's sort of like your smartphone right now. You can barely get a day out of it.
Yeah.
Right. You know?
Right. I can't get a day.
If I'm going to wear something, I want it more to be, you know, I want more power than that, you know? Maybe Apple will come up with some like solar powered kind of a deal where, you know, you wouldn't have to plug it in all the time.
Well, we'll find out on Tuesday.
On Tuesday. Right? That's right. Indeed,
it's the big day. And Apple's going to be streaming the event so you can actually watch it live.
Which is great. You know, I much rather do that than, you know, follow along on the live tweets and the live blogs.
Yeah, that's a drag.
Well, no, that's fun too. Come on.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it could be.
Well, all right.
We still do it. We both do it. We all do it simultaneously now anyway. So.
Yeah.
All right. So at the same Motorola event, Motorola announced their second generation of their Moto X phone. And it looks like a real nice improvement over the original one, which came out a year ago. Mm-hmm. So it's a faster processor, more memory, more megapixels on the camera. I haven't seen any reviews yet, so I don't know if the camera is any better. That was one of the problems with the original one. Screen's better. And the only thing that kind of like makes me kind of go, I don't know, is it's 5.2 inches. I don't know. I can't get my head around anything bigger than 5, really. And I'd like something smaller than that for my next phone. But if I'm going to stay Android and I want a flagship Android, it's looking like I'm going to have to go 5 or more. So I don't know.
Hmm.
But I thought it was cool.
Well, I got to tell you that the original Moto X that I saw at the Verizon event when they rolled out that new store at the Mall of America, I was really impressed by that device.
Yeah, no,
it felt great.
Very good build quality, and it's only $500 unlocked. So
this one's got a wood inlay or a leather inlay too.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is they've got this Moto Maker thing where you go online and you basically spec it out whatever you want. So you can pick the face color. So you can do white or black. You can do a number of different colors or surfaces on the back. And you just basically, like you're ordering a new car, you spec out exactly what you want, and then they build it for you and send it to you. So I mean, you can buy these in stores, but I think they're either white or black. But you can, if you want, you can customize it to whatever you like, which is a very, very good idea. And the quality of these things is good, and it's running a pretty much a stock Android. So there's not like
the bloatware,
like a crazy skin on it, and you're not going to get updates when Google updates their OS. It's pretty much a full Google experience, which is after being on a Nexus, that's basic. You know, that's you want that because you want to get the updates from Google as fast as they put them out there. So very nice. New Moto X available now. If you want to go on a contract and you're like with AT&T, there it's like a $100 phone, which I mean, this is the spec wise, this is every bit as good as an iPhone from a spec perspective. It's not a, you know, not a necessarily a $100 phone, which in the Apple world is the last year's phone, which coming up after next week, last year's phone will be the 5S, so that actually won't be bad for $100.
No, that's right. Not bad at all.
yeah. So yeah, unless all they right, just Steve. Do the phone the 5, but. All right, so my one cool thing of the week is actually OS X Yosemite. I decided that I would download the beta and put it on a non-production machine, my MacBook Pro. So I used Super Duper to make a complete clone of my MacBook Pro drive just in case. And it's been just working flawlessly. But in my cleverness, I didn't realize that I didn't think it through that I can't try all the goodness, like the phone ringing on your computer and the handoff, you know, how your Mac knows what your iOS device did and vice versa and the instant hotspot because you need iOS 8. So yeah. I'm not running the iOS 8 beta on my stuff. So I'm sitting there looking at, well, nice flat design because that's about all I can see. I can't try out all the different things. And so I thought that was kind of funny when I realized that, but it's working flawlessly. And the most important thing to me is that I have yet to find an app incompatibility. So no, that yeah. was awesome.
That's been great. I don't know. Have you, you haven't put it on a laptop yet or on a MacBook yet?
No, it's running on my MacBook Pro because that's my non-production machine. Okay. Yeah.
Well, you know, I've had problems with it, you know, with the machine. When you put the machine to sleep, it doesn't come back. So it shuts down. So that's been my biggest problem with the Yosemite version and also having problems with Preview not only working correctly or not working correctly and sometimes crashing. So there are some flaws in it still, but you know what? It's not beta. Pretty prime time yet. But it should be very soon.
Well, the only thing that I found, which I found really interesting, is Safari on running under Yosemite.
Yeah.
You can't delete cookies. So you delete them and then you quit Safari and then you reopen them and the cookies are still there. And so, because typically what I'll do is I'll reset Safari as part of my workflow because I don't use it as my primary browser. I use Chrome.
Right.
And so I'll reset Safari so it's totally clean, you know, factory fresh and all that. And then I can actually look at and preview sites without any caching or without any extensions or plugins, just raw. And so I've been resetting it on my MacBook Pro and then I reopen it. It's like, what the hell? The stuff is still there. So they've got to get that fixed. But at any rate. And then, just a real quick thing and then I'll shut up. I was using the feedback mechanism and I decided to go in and look at what was being sent to Apple. So I poured through all the files in the zip file and I decided I'm not participating in the feedback program anymore. Holy crap. Was there a lot of stuff in there that I thought, nah, I don't want to just give that away. I mean, that's just insane.
But all your naked pictures?
Yeah. Right. Right.
They go back in the beta process.
That's
the
right.
The Steve Borsch nudes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, trust me. Even I shudder when I see myself in the mirror. Anyway,
I see myself in the mirror out of the shower. That's not something I'm putting up on the net.
Oh, God.
That's something I wish I could unsee every day. So, anyhow.
So we pretty much covered all the events, kids. We do have a social media breakfast next week where the Minivate gang is going to be hosting social media trends with some featured speakers, and we'll be recording that and so on. And so that should be good.
Yeah. So, you know, we had a little powwow conference call yesterday to talk about how we were going to do it. There's just so many things going on in that space as far as trends goes. We could be there. It could be a 5-hour social media breakfast.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we wouldn't do that.
Then it would be a social media lunch.
It would be a sure
brunch.
It would be brunch, yeah. Social media brunch. Yeah. But hopefully.
Oh, well.
Join us for that. But so there's going to be it's going to be a big week next week. And we'll talk about it next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast. Take care, everybody. Yeah.